Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel News. I'm your host, David Price. Thank you for joining me today. You are going to hear from a bunch of... Well, you're going to hear from Steve, and you're going to hear from Kevin and Steve, and you're going to hear from Andrew, Kevin, and Steve. So there are a few segments coming your way. I am not going to keep you. I am working my way through Avenger Standoff, Assault on Pleasant Hill Alpha. Number one, where we find out who the Whisperer actually is. May have been a little bit... I'm not going to spoil it, but basically what the Whisperer says when he is introduced definitely is true, especially because of where it is on the page. It wasn't a turn a page and surprise type thing. It was a... Spider-Man revealing his identity in Civil War kind of thing. In any case, I also have, I finished All New, All Different Avengers number 6, where things have moved kind of quickly. It's strange. It's the 6th issue. It hasn't been 6 months in the making. There have been some double shipping on an issue or two. But some of the conversations, some of what was said... would have made more sense. The reveals would have probably been a little bit more shocking had this been a year in the making and not merely weeks. So I think that kind of lost some impact there. I have some Illuminati to read. I have some Nova to catch up on, as well as Doctor Strange. So I am going to basically get to reading, and I'm going to let the guys do their thing. I did get to see Daredevil for the third time, saw it with my brother. He loved it. He knew nothing of the character going in, just had a vague familiarity with some of the, basically Colossus. But other than that, he enjoyed it a lot. Again, it is a fun movie, and hopefully you got to see it. In 2 weeks, we will, I'll be in Chicago. I'll be coming home from Chicago that night. So hopefully someone else can put the episode out and you'll still be able to get some wonderful Marvel noise. If you're going to be in Chicago, hope to see you. If you're not, well, I hope you'll hear about it. So the guys are going to do their thing, like I said, and we'll be back soon. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Hey, Brickheads. Steve Raker here from the Comic Book Bunker with something a little different. We've a few times in recent months discussed the 6-inch line of Marvel Legends figures. We've mentioned the 3 3/4-inch Marvel Universe, which became the Infinite Series and now is a smaller line of Marvel Legends figures. But we've rarely presented what's going on in the LEGO Marvel realm. And with a bunch of new sets just released March 1st, I've got my kiddos, ages 11 and 6, and their 12-year-old pal, to make some noise about them. Welcome to the bunker, guys.
Hello.
It's cold down here, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty cold down here.
Really cold.
We are underground, so.
All right, what's new in the LEGO Marvel world?
All right, so first I'm going to talk about Mighty Micros. Now, that just came out March 1st, and it's pretty weird. The main difference is that they all have small legs.
The minifigures do?
The minifigures all have small legs, yes. And they all come with a little vehicle that... almost like Hot Wheels, but...
And it looks like they come in two packs of, like, a hero and a villain with a little vehicle?
Yes, they do. Also, some of them have pretty wacky faces, too. It's also a good way to get minifigures, too. Like, I know Red Skull only came in that one set, and Green Goblin only came in a junior set, and also a summer set to come as well. But also, I like the Ultron, too, because that looks a lot like the comic Ultron. I also like Hulk's vehicle. I mean, come on, it has Hulk fists on the side. I mean, that's pretty cool.
It does look like some of the old Hot Wheels versions of Hulk things. What are the matchups? What are the three offerings?
My favorite one is the Hulk and Ultron. Then there's also Captain America and Red Skull, which Red Skull's face is pretty wacky. He also comes with the Cosmic Cube, which is cool.
Yeah.
And also the last one is Spider-Man and Green Goblin. And Green Goblin's face looks absolutely crazy, so...
And I noticed the difference here, too, is this drops down to a age
range of 5-year-old range, so they're doing these to be able to access a little bit, because most of the Lego sets are 7, 8 and up, although a few are 6 and up.
Mm-hmm. And a few big ones are like 14 and up as well.
Sure. But... All right, what's next?
Here next we have the Avenger space mission. It looks really cool. It comes with Thanos, Hyperion, Captain Marvel, Space Captain America, and Space Iron Man. It looks really cool because Thanos actually has like a little hovercopter thingy.
And Thanos is a big figure. Like he's one of those oversized, like almost like the cave troll from Lord of the Rings sets and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And it looks really cool because the Avenger has two spots, one in the front for the driver's seat and one in the back for the passenger seat. And there's like a sticker part where it kind of looks like
the fan vents?
Yeah, on the helicarrier.
That is a really cool one.
I'm pretty sure.
I think it's cool, too, because it's the first Carol Danvers minifigure.
And on the front, behind the driver's seat, and on the two wings, there's a sticker, and on it, it has the Avengers symbol, an A.
It also has shooting studs, right?
Mm-hmm.
What else we got?
We got the superhero airport battle. It is for Captain America's Civil War. It comes with Scarlet Witch, Giant Man, a small figure of Ant-Man that only fits on one stud, a new Iron Man kind of looking suit, a new piece that fits on his hand. There's lots of other cool figures too, Captain America and War Machine, but what's cool about Giant Man is he's an actual buildable figure, and they have a new Avenger too.
Cool. The Giant Man figure is like looks like a giant minifigure. It's built looks like it's built
buildable.
With the same mechanics as a minifigure, but it's huge. That's cool.
It also comes with an airport kind of looking thing.
Where like a tower.
The airport tower, and it has all these different kind of luggaging, and it has
this must be a scene
gate.
From the movie.
Yeah, I think so too.
Cool.
And it also comes with Agent 13, I think.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
All right, so next up, this is my favorite set of the Civil War line. It's pretty cool. Is the Black Panther Pursuit. The three figures it comes with is Winter Soldier, which I like. Captain America with no mask, which is pretty cool, because the only other way to get that was in the $350 helicarrier set that came out in January. It also comes with Black Panther, which is my favorite part. The only other thing is that it has no leg printing, but if you end up getting General Zod's legs and put them on it, it pretty much looks like it's made for him. But
wait,
anyway...
Wait, you take General Zod's legs and put them on the Black Panther, and then it looks like he has more markings over the whole minifigure?
Yeah, but it actually looks good. It looks like it's made for the figure. So I like the little motorcycle that Winter Soldier has. You could pretty much use that for anything. I also like the jet that Black Panther has. It has cool purple lines to it. It also has some green, like neon green, which is cool. And also hidden under it, there are stud shooter blasters that shoot little green translucent studs. I also like Captain America's 4x4 vehicle, which has another spring-loaded shooter. All right, now to the next one.
We have Crossbones Hazard
Heist.
Yeah, Heist. It comes with Falcon, Black Widow, and Crossbones. It comes with Crossbones 4x4, and it has guns on the top that's shootable, I think. And it comes with Falcon and a piece that kind of attaches to the back, and you can detach it and make it fly around. It also comes with Black Widow, and she has two of her electrical staffs that you saw in the movie, Avengers 2, Age of Ultron, and her motorcycle, which was also in Age of Ultron.
What worries me about this detachable mechanical thing coming off Falcon's back, is this going to be Red Wing? Is Red Wing going to be like a robot-y thing?
I think Red Wing might actually be
I'm thinking
thing.
A little golden robot from Clash of the Titans, guys. All right, cool.
And last but not least, the video game. Marvel Avengers Lego.
Cool. What's different about this game than the last Marvel Lego game that happened last year.
Because it has Hawkeye, but, like, it has him in the Avengers Age of Ultron, and it actually has Falcon when he was Captain America.
What's different about this, this goes through all of the movies. Mm-hmm. It has, the levels are different moments from the movies.
Yep.
So it has all of the movie universe versions of the characters, but they didn't stop there. They added in a whole bunch of other characters. This is deep with mm-hmm. some crazy characters that aren't in the other Marvel universe.
A cool thing is that there is Jane Foster's Thor, and there's like Winter Soldier, and like, I forget the new Captain Marvel's name, but Kamala Khan, sorry,
yeah,
that's what it is.
Ms. Marvel.
Yeah.
I also like, it's got, like, Hulkling and the Young Avengers.
Right.
And, it's got, like, I like the Iron Man. You can get the Hulkbuster with Iron Man. I also like how when you're Iron Man and you hold Y to change the new characters, or whatever button it is on whatever gaming console you have, it brings up, like, a whole screen that has, like, all the Iron Man suits, and it has cool animations for them, too. And I also like, for the Mark One, Stan Lee comes by with a cart and just, like, throws pieces of armor on him.
Now, you've actually finished the game, right?
Yeah.
Anything cool that you discovered in later levels, or any cool characters that popped up?
I've realized that there are lots of characters that you can get in Manhattan and in the other world, so don't be just looking for other characters in Manhattan, because there are some characters in other worlds that you can get, and how you reach those other worlds is through these places where you jump on the Avenjet, and it brings you to space, and you go to where it clicks on just different worlds like Asgard.
Alright. Anything else?
Yes, I also just wanted to add, too, that in the levels, also, there are character studs that you can get, sometimes in free play, sometimes in story mode. And I also like how it was the two Avengers movies was the main thing for the levels, but then they also added a Winter Soldier level, a Captain America First Avenger level, a Iron Man 3 level, and a Thor 2 The Dark World level, which is also pretty cool.
Cool.
And also, there are different character packs that you can get, too, that you can, like, buy. Right now, there are three, but I can only get one with the season pass so far. I know one of them was the Thunderbolts pack, which is pretty cool. It was a pre-order pack, but we actually, when we got the game, we got the pre-order pack that had the Silver Centurion, which
right.
is cool.
Right, and Andrew got the Thunderbolts pack, the L.A. Rabbit.
And also, what was cool about the Silver Centurion, too, though, is that it comes with the in-game code that you can use to get him. But I think there's also a mission in Manhattan that you can get him with, too.
Alright. So. Thanks, guys. Was that fun?
Yeah.
Yeah, really fun.
Very fun.
Alright, now go do some chores to earn some money to buy these things.
And that's a wrap, folks.
Okay, see ya.
Hey folks, I'm running back to the back issue bins to bring you another issue of Daredevil to light that I assume to do every year. Except this year, I have Super Steve with me.
Yup, I love good Daredevil tales.
So you know that automatically means this is going to be better. And maybe you'll laugh at my jokes instead of, you know, me laughing at my own jokes, but I guess there's no guarantees.
Now you'll have feedback that we're laughing.
Yes, exactly. Or dead silence, which...
Insert crickets here. Or the wind blowing against a lonely Canadian cabin door.
Tumbleweeds.
You have tumbleweeds up there?
No. I just like the idea of tumbleweeds.
Maybe in Calgary.
Maybe.
You caught it between mountains. They get caught in Banff.
So we have Daredevil 355, which is the third issue that I've covered so far.
Wait, that's from way, way long ago. I thought we were doing
1996.
I thought we were doing the third Masterworks, no?
Oh, we can do that too.
Actually, we did the I even looked it up. We did the first Marvel Masterworks, Dave K, LA Rabbit, and I on episode 168 in March of 2012, and then in October of that same year on episode 181, we did the second Marvel Masterworks. And then you and I and the rabbit on episode 222 a couple of years ago in 2014, did the Daredevil 50th anniversary, where we looked back at his whole titles publishing career, including this era.
Wow, we keep on coming back to old Hornhead.
There's even one more. The first one was Dave Kay and I covered the infamous Shadowland event way back in 2010, even the tie-in books and stuff, back in October of 2010 on episode 134. How about that?
I've probably said this. I don't know if I said this on an episode, but that was just going to be a blip in time. And what do you know? It is just a blip in time.
Shadowland fell.
Exactly.
On the Kingpin's head.
Well, it was the police officers that were all like weirded out. They're like, huh, I don't think he was authorized to do the construction. He didn't meet the requirements, but, you know.
That's a hell of a roof.
Yeah.
It's got some good feng shui going, that's for sure.
So you like on this cover, Steve, how they have the whole digital DD logo going on?
You know what I like about it? It's Carrie Nord.
Yes. But you know how silly I was when I was looking at the credits? I'm like, Seeping. I'm like, I'm not quite sure who Seeping is on pencils. And then later on I looked, oh, it's S. Epting. Oh!
Yeah, this is a really weird issue because Larry Hama does the layouts. Then Carrie Nord does the pencils, but not for half the issue. From pages 6 to 13, it's Steve Epting. And then Matt Ryan inks over everybody, and he puts this like almost like early Mike Diodato Studios touch on everything. That it's like whether it's over Epting or Nord, it's got a strange finish because obviously it's four accomplished artists: Hama, Nord, Epting, and Ryan. It's just crazy.
Yeah, that is quite weird. Like, I just remember this as, like, the Kiesel and Nord run. I didn't retain any of the other.
It's written by another artist.
But on the cover here, he's going up against Pyro, and they have these fancy arrows. Like, it's the mutant master of flames, Pyro, and the man without fear is about to get burned.
Yeah, they're doing, like, a little yin and yang thing with the arrows, but the lighting on Daredevil and the choice to not show his face at all and just show underneath his chin blackened like that is bold.
So I thought this was like the T-Bolts era, but I think this were just before the T-Bolts era.
I mean, it looks like a boob head, doesn't it?
It looks weird. So, yeah, I guess we already covered some of the credits, but yeah, Carl Kiesel, writer, Larry Hama, layouts, Carrie Nord, pencils, Steve Epting, pencils from pages 3 to 13, Matt Ryan Inker, Yul Higgins and Jim Novak letters, Christy Shield colors, Malibu separations.
The great Christy Shield. This is towards the end of her career with Marvel. She was around from my golden age.
Wow. James Fielder, editor, and Bob Harris as the chief.
Yes.
Jeez.
I was spitting a little venom.
Still, Steve. But yeah, I guess I was the famous Venom spitter from back of the day, where we changed his name around. This issue, we're getting back to what happened last issue, where like Hyde, like Matt's supposed to be defending Hyde. He's like they had a little battle, and then Hyde's like, well, I didn't really murder that woman.
I love Hyde as a Daredevil villain. Like, I think of him as a Daredevil villain because of those great Gene Colan drawing his big jacket, tunic, and everything, you know? Those great battles between Daredevil and Hyde. I love when someone tells a good Hyde story in these pages.
Yeah, I guess I would consider him either an Avengers or a Daredevil villain. I know he's went up against, like, Spider-Man and, like, all those other guys.
Yep. He works better as a street villain.
Yeah, I think so. He sort of has that whole mad scientist type of thing going on that Marvel loves anyways. But this is going to be the whole storyline for, I think, another, like, three or four issues where, like, Daredevil has to represent Hyde.
Dun, dun, dun.
So this is, he's always trying to come to terms, like, by the end of this issue, like if he wants to do this, because he's like, well, you know, Hyde's a supervillain and everything, so.
And he's beaten Matt within an inch of his life on a number of occasions. And if he didn't kill this girl, he killed somebody else. So it's like, oh, man.
That's because he's starting out at the new legal firm, too. So they're like, they're all about the press and everything like that. So they're like, hey, you're going to be taking on this case. And he's like, not so much. Not so much.
Yeah, it's kind of forced upon him by his new corporate master. But then he'll go and investigate some stuff as Daredevil and then decide to... You know, this is about him getting his groove on to be able to come to terms with taking on this job rather than it being something that's thrust upon him.
Yeah, and back in the old offices there, they're packing up, looking at all their old stuff here. And of course, Matt's going to be tripping over some books because he's like, whoa, the room's not the same anymore. He has no senses that tells him about books being on the floor.
Poor Matt.
Yeah. And then you get this awesome Kool-Aid Jammers. Try Island Twist from Kool-Aid Kids.
Yum.
And win a great prize.
Yum, yum.
You want to know what it is, Steve?
What's the great prize?
You can get a Timex watch, a Sony home entertainment system, but it's just like a boombox.
That's right.
Or then it looks like you can get some kind of Hawaii bikes.
Wow.
Yeah. And they have 1,000 of each.
Whoa! Sign me up. How much Kool-Aid do I gotta drink?
It's not like a points thing. Like, I know the whole system before was like, you gotta get enough points and you like get like 1,000 points, kids. And then there's like 2 points on like a package of Kool-Aid.
No, it's in the bottom of the container. Like, you gotta eat through it all to get to see it. That's even worse.
But on this one, it's like you need the winning game piece that says winner.
Oh,
yeah, right. So
I'll keep trying.
You're probably not winning anything. But anyways, back at the office. Liz Allen has an ongoing thing here with Foggy, which I think is perfect because there's like the whole warehouse with Osborn that Hyde seems to have bought, which is kind of strange. Like, I'm like, really? He bought some weird abandoned warehouses using some stash of money when Harry Osborn was crazy. You assumed, I guess, last year he was Norman or whatever. But yeah, apparently Harry was selling off some old warehouses by the waterfront there.
This just seems smart to me for Liz to be dating Foggy because she always needs a lawyer for one reason or another, it seems.
She seems less evil here, though.
Yeah, she wasn't always evil, but she certainly has always been at risk of needing a lawyer.
But I think this is where I always get like the business Liz Allen stuff from. And then in the modern stuff, when they have her like running a company again, I'm like, I always go back to, oh yeah, they kind of dropped that like in between the 90s and... I guess all of the 2000s. Like, there seems like there was many years in between, like, this story and then, like, the modern Liz Allen stuff where she's all into business.
Yep.
Oh, and then you get a Bullpen Bolton's page where they're celebrating Excalibur going to 100. Looks like Carlos Pacheco is coming in to tell some Fantastic Four stories with Onslaught. And I would like to tell you the wish list of what's on sale this month, but they have black text on this really... bright red, so it's kind of hard to read.
It's a mess. Thanks, Malibu.
Well, they fixed the letters pages because they used to have that like image
underneath. Oh, I know, that was bad too. They were trying, but ugh, not successful.
Yeah, so now that the letters page is just white with black text, which actually makes it really readable. But yeah, Matt just came back up to the office to Daredevil out, as the case may be. And you need every issue, you need a moment where someone mentions something about the devil or devilish thoughts or hellfire or what have you.
I like how Karen Page's hair changes in every panel. Goes from like curled in the front, like curled bangs, to then being just like straight shot, greased. Again, more looking like that Deodato with the hair lick down the middle look. Goes from like soft to sharp. It's pretty funny.
But yeah, when Daredevil's out hanging out in the city and just swinging around trying to clear his head, he goes by some firefighters who he's going to race to a fire.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know how I feel about that, but he sort of gives them the heads up like, hey, there's going to be a fire going on. And once you know it, the fire is at those abandoned warehouses where Daredevil and Hyde were fighting the other issue.
Jeez.
That doesn't seem suspicious at all. No. Like, you know,
Liz is going to need a lawyer.
I think so. The fire... it's in the shape of a dragon and animals, and it seems to have a life of its own. I don't know about fires. I know fires can be weird in the Marvel Universe, but, you know, that's a clear a clear sign we're going to have pyro on the scene.
Well, can Daredevil see fire?
Seems like he has trouble with fire.
Okay, so he can't see that there's dragons and stuff.
He shouldn't have a... So what you're saying, this is wasted? Like, pyro's just like, look how awesome I am. I'm making this, like, castle and all this other stuff. And then, like, Daredevil's like, not doing anything for me, dude.
Well, the firemen are all yelling like, oh my gosh, it's a dragon in the shape of a dragon. It's like in the shape of the Lusitania. It's in the shape of, oh my gosh, it's the world. And so Daredevil picks it up that way. But then he's all saying that he has a good idea who's behind this. And like you said, it's probably Pyro. But this is Daredevil. So when I'm reading this, the first thing I'm thinking is Typhoid Mary. But he goes right to it must be Pyro. And he's right. What a great panel of Daredevil walking off into the flames, though. It's like, it has like a almost an Ariel Olivetti touch to it, the way the feathering off the shadows and stuff. A great panel from Nord and company.
Is that intentional, Steve? Because you know Olivetti's coming on to this title like in the future.
Yeah.
I also think of Nuke, like the Avengers walking through the fire and born again. But then you're one of those
I don't know of that scene.
Born again readers and everything, which is problematic.
Well, I'm sick of Nuke too. I saw the new wave of Marvel Legends figures that's coming out from Civil War, the second round from Civil War there, and it's like Nuke is one of them. I'm like, ah.
Give me a red, Steve.
Nuke.
But I think Daredevil can sense the heat sometimes, so.
Yeah, but again, he doesn't think it's Typhoid Mary. I'm still surprised at that.
So you must be in jail though, right?
Not for long.
Not for long. But yeah, Pyro's here because I guess he wants death by Daredevil.
Hmm.
Because there's a little reference here to an X-Men story.
Yeah, well, he's going to be seeing the devil soon enough, right?
But yeah, he's suffering a little something from the Legacy virus here. It's 1996, so...
It called the mutants.
Yeah, they're always calling the mutants.
Yep. And then building them back up and then culling them again.
Yeah.
Separating the wheat from the chaff.
We got a subscription page here. Now, this one I can read. And they're promoting the Heroes Reborn, Jim Lee and Rob Liefeld. You can subscribe to Avengers, Cap, Fantastic Four, and Iron Man.
No thanks.
I'm kind of surprised they have a whole subscription thing because that didn't last that long. But
can I do 12 issues and just do the first three of each?
Maybe.
Before they all jumped off the books and replaced it with, Brett Booth and other folks.
Well, you can have a whole studio do it, right?
Yeah, right.
Ugh. You can have Simonson write some issues.
This was also problematic. In every way.
I remember jumping on board.
Other than the Thunderbolts, which we'll have later in the episode here to talk about again, other than them forming, what good was it? Not good at all.
Did you have the Heroes for Hire forming around that time, too? The Alpha Flight forming?
Alpha Flight's been around. You know the deal.
Yeah, but that was when the Heroes were gone. Like, all these other teams formed.
Mm-hmm.
Kazar came to your favorite, to New York. He had to face off against Thanos. I knew you'd like that one.
Yikes.
But you can also subscribe here to Untold Tales of Spider-Man, Professor Xavier and the X-Men.
We got to read that Untold Tales of Spider-Man sometime, don't we?
I think so. I have the Omnibus.
Do you really?
Yeah.
All right, let's...
I bought some of those issues three times. I was just going through the bins, like I was reorganizing, and I saw that annual issue too, where they have, it's like the Fantastic Four, probably Neymar and Spider-Man, and I think Spider-Man might be hitting on the Invisible Girl.
Kurt Busiek comics are fun.
It's something weird like that, and I was just like, oh yeah, this looks really fun. I've never read the annual. Like, I've read most of the issues, but still not everyone. And we also have here, for the younger readers, Disney comic hits. Wait, what?
Bing, bang, boom.
But yeah, Pyro's going out, back to our story, and does that whole trick of, shooting the fire, the building's unstable, and it collapses in on him and Daredevil.
Sure.
Of course, when Daredevil comes up at the docks, Pyro's nowhere to be seen.
If he didn't die then, he's the way he was coughing and gagging and acting, he's going to be dying tomorrow.
If I remember correctly, he shows up in Uncanny X-Men with, like, Avalanche, and he's still dying. And then I think he's probably survives for, like, 20 or 30 issues. He's still dying, and then he finally dies in, like, some Legacy Virus Senator Kelly story. What?
Great.
So hot, it's practically radioactive. New Spider-Man pasta from Chef Boyardee.
Ooh, spicy. That's a spicy meatball.
Indeed it is. Is there a superhero fight for the issue, I guess? Matt returns to the old offices and no one's there. And he's like, oh, I don't know where Foggy and everyone could be. I don't know if he's... Like, since I'm only reading these, like, once a year, I'm kind of trying to remember if Matt remembers that the whole relationship that Foggy has with Rosalind Sharp, the Razor.
The Razor.
But they keep on hinting around it this whole issue where, like, Karen's like, oh, how long have you known her? And then Foggy's like, all my life, but we didn't really run in the same circles.
Hmm.
So he doesn't want to really let on to people what his relationship is.
She's his Electra.
That'd be weird.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Matt eventually goes to the offices there where Foggy is with Rosalind Sharp. And Matt's going to take the case because he knows that Hyde is innocent. Hyde should go down, but not for someone he didn't murder.
All right. He's going to defend the law instead of defending Hyde. But what struck me odd is like, so what was... I had to look back. So wait a minute. What changed his mind here? And he's like, Daredevil found out something important that he didn't do it and told me about it. And I flip him back like, wait, what did Daredevil find out? Flip him back. Just that it was the building that the lady was murdered in is the one that was burned down. And the fact that Pyro said that it wasn't Hyde who hired him.
I think he still wanted to at the beginning.
That was weird. That's pretty circumstantial evidence. It's not even saying that the building was burned because of the murder, right? And it's not, and the way that Pyro said it, he was like, well, what if it, who said it was Hyde? He didn't exactly say it wasn't Hyde either. I mean, so it was, he's building a soft case. But I guess we'll find out next year, next issue.
That's pretty sad. No, I'm sure he wanted to at the beginning. Already when he was talking to Hyde and everything, because he's, like, doing the whole lie detector thing.
Yeah, he knew.
And dying men, they never lie. Unless it's, like, Jimmy Olsen. And he says, I'm dying, Superman, tell me your secret ID. Then, you know.
True. Good call.
But they have, in the letters page, they have someone from Scarborough, Ontario, who says they love Daredevil. They love this run. Another Canadian that loves this run.
That's high praise, Kevin.
It is. You know, I think it was a good... It was a good run. Like, I wouldn't say I've been rereading these. I wouldn't say I've been blown away by any issue. Like, I think that's coming, because it just sort of seems to pick up steam as it's going along. But I'd say these are entertaining, good stuff. And what else could you hope for in, like, 1996 Marvel?
The hard thing is they're not on the Marvel Unlimited digital, and they haven't been collected, have they? So
In the future.
Okay.
Well, the thing is, they've done 365 to 380, so the volume that's going to come out...
Oh, I see. You're almost caught
in
up.
In the next, I don't know, what, 10 years? You got to figure Daredevil's on one of the faster tracks for the Epic collections. So this is going to be in the, I guess, 345 to... Or 350 to 365, like in that volume for the Epic collection at some point.
Huh. That's a lot of Nascenti Romita Jr. stuff, too, isn't it? Is that post?
DeMatteis, I think.
Okay.
Which is... Oh, and I think Warren Ellis.
Wow.
It gets really weird.
Because Nascenti followed O'Neill, right? O'Neill and Miller?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah. Because then you have... Oh, there's Smithy, which apparently is... Oh, what's his name?
J.D. Salinger.
I'm trying to remember who's the writer after Nascenti?
After Nascenti?
Yeah.
G.G. Chichester?
Yeah, like he goes under like another name.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's like gets really, really weird.
I liked his stuff. He did a S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, Nick Fury book and wrote a few other things here and there.
Yeah.
All right.
But it is just a really odd era. But like I was about to jump off the book, I think, and then... This run starts, and then I'm like, yay, I'm going to stay on. And then, you know, it's weird if I would have jumped off, because that's like the only moment I like really considered jumping off Daredevil, and that's almost when I first started reading it. So basically, there's been like no jumping off point since 1996.
Were you just sort of picking up different stuff from Marvel to try, like what got you to try Daredevil in the first place?
I think my first issue was near the end of that whole Fall from Grace weirdness.
So just on the stand next to something else you were buying and decided to pick it up, check it out?
Yeah.
Right.
They probably had an article in Wizard, the comics magazine, and they had, like, all the different... Oh, would that be... Yeah, that's probably the reason.
Were you going to, like, a newsstand or a direct market shop at that time?
Yeah, direct market. Because I'm thinking back to 300, because I picked up 300, and, like... But I don't know if that had any... Because it was the same writer, so I'm like, second-guessing myself now why... Because I was definitely into Daredevil, but then that even that got a little weird, like, before they did Fall from Grace.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, so it was probably because it was the same writer, and then they're like, oh, he has armor, or Elektra's coming back, and then it was like a big book.
And they also, it was like, the time they were really slight, if you remember when we did our big retrospective in 220, episode 222 there, it was a time where they were really bannering the books with, like, part one of four, and giving everything, like, a splashy name, so it's like you were reading all these mini arcs, mini novels, you know? Everything seemed like a little mini event. All right, should we get Andrew and do some Thunderbolts?
That sounds good.
Let's do it.
Welcome back, Marvel Noise listeners. It's your favorite Justice Like Lightning, Marvel's Most Wanted Thunderbolt segment in full effect. This time we haven't taken a long hiatus, not an imaginary story, not a what if, but the real deal, Thunderbolts. We're picking up where we left off before.
Is there another Thunderbolt segment out there that we're unaware of?
I don't know. I always assume there is. There's always people trying to take us down. But they don't know we're the unstoppable juggernaut of that is Marvel Noise. And who are we? We are Andrew the Alley Rabbit, WWX Kev,
and Steve Raker.
Down in the bunker.
One more time at least before we get to, or no, two more times before yes. We get to the Fight Club stuff.
This is our segment where we review the original, the real Thunderbolts and their fresh debut in the last century. Up through the present time. We are currently in the batch right before 75. And if you listen to our last episode, we're in the bi-weekly ship, the twice a month shipping, where we split the books. We covered the even story, which was on Counter-Earth, but the odd story is in the regular 616, well, formerly regular 616. I guess now it's deceased, thanks to Secret Wars.
Definitely odd, too.
Really? I was going to say the Counter-Earth is more odd to me. This seems more normal.
All of this was odd. This was reminiscent of why I wasn't reading the title at the time, and reminiscent of why it was kind of on its way, had some momentum to having a complete change. Both first a change in editorial office that just happened last episode, and then the whole focus of the book is going to change. It's going to be crazy. They just like that name, though, don't they? They like that Thunderbolts name.
Oh, they love that name.
But, Kevin, 2002 Thunderbolts, who's on the team?
All right, so this is our other team from Earth with our new Thunderbolts, in quotes. If you can see me doing air quotes right now, this really only has two original bolts here.
Wait, would you stand up when you do that? I can't quite see.
Oh, the video's not coming through?
You got to count all those Eratza bolts. The Bachelors of Evil that have joined their side.
Yeah. So we have Melissa, who's Songbird. She uses sound and can be pretty persuasive with her powers. That's a lot of P's. Clint is Hawkeye. He's an archer who can make a bow out of anything. Really, just listen to our previous Thunderbolt segment, I think a couple episodes back. Plant Man is Blackheath. He becomes more plant than man. Cardinal is Harrier, another tech armor suit guy. Gypsy Moth is Skin, who controls fabric. Amazon is Mankiller, strong, kind of the female version of Eric. And Cyclone is Cyclone? He's the French man who is a whirlwind knockoff. It's interesting to note with this half, too, the story is becoming heroes, and the Counter-Earth part is the becoming villains story.
It's weird that Amazon took on Atlas's Eric you know, color scheme and kind of costume design when she totally, you know, rebuffed his romantic advances and friendship.
Well, you saw them in the bar. They both had the same color of hair. It was weird.
The same biceps.
And this is our regular cover artist, lead penciler, Patrick Zercher. Again, still Fabian Nicienza. But we're having finishing inks by Sandu Floria on this. We're starting off with 67. We're going to do 69 and 71 to fold the two segments together. For those of you that are particularly ambitious, you could edit the two segments so they are in chronological order. But we decided, thanks to Kevin's wise guidance as Master Thunderbolter, that we're going to split it via story.
And well, they cleanly split it editorial-wise. I mean, there's not one image of this team in the even number issues and vice versa. So it just made perfect sense that way.
Yeah, we've already had massive discussions since the beginning about my order. We want to read Thunderbolts in.
Well, you were the genesis for this entire segment, your professed love of Thunderbolt, so it only seemed fitting that you should get final editorial say on how these issues play out.
How come they have Vey on the cover here, but that's not accurate?
Well, Vey inks the cover art, and he also inks the next couple of issues, so they start scrambling around with both artists and inkers, like changing every issue practically between this and the even number ones. And I think part of that is likely, again, a sign of where the book was headed, which was in a downward spiral. And also the editorial change, switching from one office to the next. I'm sure there was some jumbling of just fitting some slots in because the new office was already looking ahead to issue 76 and the reboot.
Not entirely modern, but the covers are, like, getting all modern. They're just all character shots that are only vaguely related to the story. It's like those Ultimate Spider-Man covers and all that. Those Fantastic Four covers. Like, all those new Marvel covers where you can't tell what's really inside the issue anymore.
Or, like, every cover in the 2000s, right? Practically, the late 2000s. That's the way they were.
Doesn't give me a whole lot either, because it's, as Kevin said, it's our Mach 3 knockoff Harrier. But he's kind of bent in what appears to be a very awkward position. But the standard trope of the, he has a visor that reflects the person facing, which everyone loves. But by 2002, maybe we could retire that as a thing you do on your cover.
We only like it when they do it in Citizen V's face mask.
Oh, that's right. You know what the other cool thing is, though? If you are a New Warriors reader, you are just like, yeah, another New Warriors character.
Is it really?
Yeah. And they mentioned Sprocket in here, and like, yeah, the pilot for the New Warriors.
With the white and red color scheme, and it just seemed like movie Falcon or something, being armored and a black guy, and I don't know.
Well, this picks up, I think I had said in passing that I felt kind of the pitch to this guy seemed a little thin, that he should hate Hawkeye. When Hawkeye really, it was Graviton that was the one that was responsible. That's the backstory, is that the pitch Crimson Cowl made is that Hawkeye is to blame for his daughter's death.
Yeah, I think he was listening to you and he said, well, I'm gonna fill this in and make Andrew look like a fool a couple issues later.
Well, you know what it is? It isn't the movie Falcon that he looks like so much. It's the one from the recent animated series. The Avengers Assemble, where he's more armored and has the domed helmet and everything, where a bunch of guys sat around a table and were like, how do we make Falcon cooler than he is when he's plenty cool as he normally is?
Add Red Wing. One portion Red Wing will fix everything.
Oh, vampire Red Wing?
No, regular Red Wing, the bird that's smarter than he is.
Red Wolf?
This gives Harrier's backstory to start off, how he had a rough life and went into the military and became a mercenary, and a one night stand ends up birthing the character Kevin mentioned, who went on to New Warriors fame and appeared here, but was crushed by Graviton in a particularly grueling sequence.
Yeah.
In that famous slapdown issue.
What they're really doing though is setting up by giving the backstory that Harrier has a vendetta or some scales to even, some blood on the, wants some blood on his ledger, and he wants it to be Hawkeye's blood. So throughout this arc, throughout the three issues, they have times where they flash to Harrier's face, and especially with him being behind the visor, you don't particularly know what he's thinking, and what he says can kind of, it has the double meaning with us as the readers, knowing that he has the vendetta against Hawkeye, and you're kind of just waiting for him to possibly betray Hawkeye. There's all these conversations about trust and you know, counting on your teammates and all that stuff, and then they'll flash to him and he's completely silent, and you're supposed to be filling in the blanks that he's like, Clint, I'm gonna get you.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm still on the fence about the believability of why he would choose. I guess he can't really go after Graviton, so might as well go after Hawkeye. But we end up in a place we've spent more time talking about on this show than any other fictional country.
Latveria?
That is Simcaria. I think we've spent more time talking about Simcaria on this show. Jeez, home of Silver Sable, than we have any other fake land.
Yeah, good thing we covered that Silver Sable.
And so it starts out again, as Steve said, that tension about Harrier sighting Hawkeye and then shooting rockets. And it looks like it's going to hit Hawkeye, but it hits two Wild Pack agents. And Wild Pack is the name of Jim Lee's... Silver Sable's crew.
The thing I do like about the whole Harrier wondering which way he's going to go, it's reminiscent of sort of that struggle that's been going on with all the Thunderbolts since we first started reading the book, which is, you know, is when he does something good, you don't know if he's just doing it to gain some more leverage for when he's going to do the bad thing or if he's really, his heart is in it, you know? And for most of these characters, we're not experiencing that as much anymore, but here it's whittled right down and sort of symbolic of one of the aspects of this whole series.
And of course, if you're going to go into Simcaria and mess with the Wild Pack, you're going to get Silver Sable, hot off her series that we discussed in a previous.
How great is the Silver Sable's design though? Whenever, like, she's such an unused she had her series and everything, but since then she's really been underutilized. I'd love to see, like, has there ever been a Silver Sable Black Widow like adventure together?
That's a good question. I'm going to say no.
The international intrigue of, because of the backstory of each of the characters, the two different hair colors right next to each other, and then the two different costume colors too. This seems like a no-brainer to me, Kevin.
Oh, wait a second. Was there that was Domino, wasn't it? There was that Fraction. Was it Fraction or was it Remender Punisher story where it was Domino, Silver Sable, and wasn't there a third? Probably wasn't Black Widow.
I'm with you, Steve. We enjoyed covering her series, although it seems like they just haven't picked up any of those threads that were left behind.
Well, she's still dead.
So Hawkeye explains that he's here and kind of again resets the table about this whole segment is about Justin Hammer has died currently in this continuity at this time, 2002. And prior to that point, he created this super secret biological weapon that was inflicted with every hero he'd backed, every villain, everyone he'd come in contact with has these, let's call them nanobites, for lack of a better word.
Oh,
that infiltrated their system.
Oh, nanoprobes again?
Yes, and so the point is the new Crimson Cowl and the Bachelors of Evil are looking to control that. And once they control it, obviously, they can either kill or order all the people around. And that is why Hawkeye was able to convince Whirlwind Knockoff and the other ones to join him. Because they don't want to be under the thumb of the Crimson Cowl and have their life and death in their hands.
And it's funny, originally it was supposed to be a control mechanism, but then it ended up just being like a internal time bomb. So instead of it being that Hammer would be able to, through this virus, actually control the superpowered individual, he ends up only with the ability to blow them up remotely. So then it takes the extra piece of doing the blackmail to then bend them to their will. And that's where the cowl is left, where she wants to be able to enact this virus so that she can then blackmail all these superpowered heroes and villains to work on her behalf. But the trigger, the only thing that will set off the catalyst to activate this whole scenario is the Plant Man.
Blackie.
Jason Woodrow. Him with a more famous DC analog that did all this, you know, over 15 years before this did. But we ignore that to move on. We're also now, while they're setting this up, we get some backstory on our fake Thunderbolts about, you know, how Amazon Skeen or Skin or Skein or whatever you want to call her.
Just say Skin, it's easier.
Yeah, certainly a lot of it showing, that's for sure.
Yeah, and she's like a saucy minx who is in charge of her own sexuality and not afraid to wield it. So when the French buffoon Whirlwind tries to hit on her, she just unravels his clothing and embarrasses him.
And because she can control fabric, she has this like impossible costume too, you know?
Yes. And for once it makes sense. As Steve said, normally those impossible costumes, you're like, boy, if they move 2 inches, everything can just fall right out. But Silver Sable is like, hey, we're in Simcaria. If you have a problem with the Crimson Cowl who lives here, let's just go knock on the door.
But what I don't understand is, since they've been working on this plan for hours, yet the plan is just Silver Sable going up to the front door and going, hello, is anyone there? Yeah, I'm going to arrest you.
Well, it was more like Sable, I think, was letting them come up with what their plan was to determine really if their motives were genuine. And what they were going to come up with a plan and see how that, what the footprint in her country of enacting that plan would be. And she doesn't give up the information that she has until they're actually practically on their way, saying that, oh, she knows, she already has had relations with this, with Justine Hammer's daughter, and is kind of has her in asylum in Simcaria and inhabiting this base, so she knows right where she is and everything. So she's like, hey, I'm giving her asylum in my country. I've talked to her. We don't know the extent of their, you know, does she go there every Sunday for tea and catching up? We don't know. So she's like, I'm just gonna go over there and talk to her.
I love how Harrier has the sequence too, like, one of these days, Hawkeye,
right in the face. Yeah, it does seem, well, I like the Crimson Cowl. I'm okay with, I mean, she answers the door as Justine Hammer in a red overcoat, and then that morphs into the Crimson Cowl.
You remember this, guys? This is the face that Dallas is drawing on Counter-Earth.
What? But that face wasn't important.
So if you were reading those like bi-weekly, you would get that one crossover, that one link between them.
Hilarious. Huh. The other thing about Sable going and knocking on the door is she's like a head of state. She's used to trying diplomacy first. So I kind of get that as part of her character.
I do as too. I'm just really surprised she wasn't more. She's really just taken out.
Yeah, there was no backup plan.
and like, yeah, like she's a rookie. Like they just,
yeah.
Crimson Cowl just grabs her and bang. And you're like, come on, man.
Yeah, that's like she just lost Sable. Simcaria.
Did they realize that Crimson Cowl can teleport, right? Like, how many times does that happen?
Oh, I know.
So, I was just a little, you know, I like Sable. I expect her, like you say, I totally expect her. She has lunch with Dr. Doom, for criminy's sake, but you also expect her to, you know, put in a better showing. I mean, I know it's not her title, so they can look her, make her look a little foolish, but still, you want her to represent well for her peeps. But it turns out that she also still has some of the Bachelors of Evil on her side. Hydro Man, the Machine Smith, who, like I said, is way too powerful to be like a flunky. I don't get that at all. Black Mamba, some Serpent Society reject.
If you were Hydro Man, your water, would you want to be smoking? I always wonder about. Like, I guess they're still allowed to smoke in these Marvel comics in 2002.
Yes. Well, remember, he's been, you know, mixed with the Sandman and had all sorts of other weird things done to him.
Nothing like a soggy stogie.
That's what I was wondering about.
I just don't know why Machine Smith gives his metallic form facial hair, if we're on to, like, bizarre.
Well, there's some great facial hair on display in these issues, especially with Blackheath.
But most of the team gets taken out and Machine Smith's eyes flash, and then he, because he can control computer, And at that point, Harrier was carrying Hawkeye and drops Hawkeye into a big gorge full of water.
Does he have control of him, or did he want to drop him anyways? Isn't that
the
implication?
They set it up so you don't know, and then the issue breaks.
But why would you drop him onto hard ground? And then he would be a flat pancake and dead.
Well, you had 4 weeks to think about that until you got the next issue.
Well, I had about half a minute to think about it. But yes, technically, that should be it. Then that leads us to 69, which is Blackheath looking like his plant material looks a little too much like fur.
Yeah.
In my estimation of this.
Yep. He's got hobbit feet going.
Yeah, totally.
But again,
I'm not familiar with the who's on pencils here. Like I don't know if I've seen them before.
Jean-Jacques Zalowski?
Yeah. But I think I like the artwork better in this issue than how it starts off in 71. Yeah.
Well, you got Al Vey coming back, so maybe he provides the continuity.
Yes. There's some figure work proportionally that bothers me throughout this issue, and then as the issue ends, I think the faces get wonky, but it starts out with a great splash of Crimson Cowl.
Yeah.
You're not bothered by her face, Steve? Why I'm laughing is her face is literally just two glowing eyes.
And why is Mankiller the Thunderbolts have been defeated, but why is Mankiller the only one that has the face, like, guard thing where she's going to bite someone, but, like, Cyclone, Songbird...
Dude, and... do you remember those scenes of her and Eric talking in the bar? I would slap a muzzle on her, too.
Yeah, but you're going to have Cyclone when he wakes up, like, running his mouth off? Or are you going to have Songbird who has actual sonic powers?
Yeah, well, he's unconscious. But nothing? They're unconscious. Let them be unconscious. But I don't want that one. What if she starts talking about Eric and, oh man, I just don't even want to hear it.
I thought it was more a political statement about having to muzzle strong women and they don't want to hear from it. So I was like, you go, you make those statements, those bold statements. But as Kevin says, they're all incapacitated at the feet and the Crimson Cowl's monologuing, as are Messines Mish, Hydro Man, Black Mamba. And I like that they give them their little, you know, name plates underneath, and
yeah.
Blackheath looks terrible. He's been totally dehydrated out.
Ugh. He looks like Wood God.
And it has a bit of an indie vibe, I'm gonna say, for this artist, with the sort of very sharp lines for the faces. And basically Crimson Cowl's like, oh, I'm gonna get the secret out of you, Blackheath. And then bam, he gets knocked out and gets sent into the green.
Yeah, where we see him meeting up with all this green, what's he called? The Verdant?
Verdant Green.
Oh, Fields, yeah. But he's naked this
called
whole time.
Copyright infringement of DC is what it's called.
Yeah. Like when Swamp Thing's running around naked, you know, it's different than a guy. He's part guy, I guess. They're still part, you know. But anyways, this seems more a naked guy just roaming the green here.
Yeah, he's going on this, like, vision quest trip kind of thing where he is pretty much having time stop for him so that he can think about the choice he's got in front of him. He is the catalyst, again, for releasing the toxin that would allow the Crimson Cowl to blow everybody up remotely.
Yeah, he's so planty here that when his head hits the floor, it makes a weird sound effect, and, like, all these spores and stuff like come out of his head.
His other option is he has a back door embedded in the code of this virus that he helped to develop, that he can also disperse the antidote and choose to make this a method that no one could use in the future against all of these heroes and villains, this remote blowing up thing. So, but the problem is, if he lets all the heroes and villains go, survive, promote the meat of the world, eventually the meat is going to, you know, even haphazardly, without meaning to, destroy all of the green and destroy all the plants in the world. Whereas if he lets all of the, if he helps the Crimson Cowl, he thinks there's going to be a lot of people who die. And if a lot of people die along the way, then that helps the green. So,
and he even suggests that he could expand it and kill all the people in the world. And that's the tension. All these crazy plant people, that was all of those, you know, they want to get rid of people because people are against plants.
And Plant Man was always a bad guy, but he's really not trying to be a bad guy these days. So he is conflicted and he just gets to go to this little happy place to think about his conflict and wrestle with it.
Yeah, so he is completely catatonic. So they're going to leave all the other Thunderbolts passed out while they go to the movie theater that Crimson Cowl has and wait for Plant Man to awaken.
You think that she has that in her base, like what she had at the old base?
Why not? That movie theater was a big selling point.
It was.
You don't give a movie theater and then take it away. But it turns out the plan that took hours to concoct was they would fake being in trouble. Although it seems risky that, I don't know, they're lucky the cowl just didn't kill them all right there. But this is still 2002 and they're not going to kill all our heroes just yet.
So how long has Songbird been braiding parts of her hair? I started wondering in these issues too.
Yeah, it looks cool. I mean, this is Songbird's coolest costume, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. And she frees up Amazon. Skein ran away. And Amazon's like, she's not tough enough, but maybe she was the smart one. And then all the other idiots start to wake up. But something's happened. The trauma has affected Cyclone because he no longer speaks with a stupid accent.
Oh, geez.
So I think he suffered some head damage because there's no Z's or Zoot Allures or anything. Like, I don't know why people aren't worried about him. Like,
well, it's like, isn't this the same thing that happened to Jolt? Like, she was speaking, like at some point, they're just like, okay, let's just cut that.
I think everyone's just relieved as far as the characters. They're not going to be like, hey, where's your accent? It's not like they want to hear that accent again.
You can always picture the accent in your own mind if you want it to be there.
I keep waiting for the moment when Hawkeye's lip scar disappears.
Oh, yes.
This is how I learn foreign language. I learn French the Marvel way, which is from Batroc, Z Leaper, and Cyclone.
Absolutely. Is that how you learned your German, too?
Yes, from the Baron. But in this
Hair gig, Baron, you mean?
Yes, Hair Baron. There we go. I'm forgetting fully a third of my German there. While Cyclone and Amazon have no subtle attacks, we know who can sing a sweet song, and that's Melissa, who knocks out Mambo Number 5 and Hydro Man.
And meanwhile, then we get another grisly autopsy of Black Heath again. And you know what's funny here is that Crimson Cowl's just like, shut up, Machine Smith. I don't want to know about this guy's origin. But the reader wants to know because you turn the page and we get like that origin continuing, except it's not told by Machine Smith's speculating anymore. Like, we're getting the actual origin from Black Heath himself. And I think I've read this Spider-Man story he mentions here, which is kind of cool.
I like that old costume of his with the gloves and the, you know, the completely covered face mask. You know, it was a little Shocker looking with the almost like Mole Man glasses on over it. That was a cool costume.
Yeah, I think the light green is cool too, and the big headdress type thing. Yeah. But Hans Mole Man's really short, so that's a different. He's like tall and lanky. Yeah, so they continue to read the autopsy. I mean, he tells the story about how he's got to decide between the toxin and destroying mankind or helping people. And we decide that, you know, Black Heath, he's okay, despite the name being sounding a lot like Blackheart and those other bad guys that have black in the title. He's a type of guy with black in his title, like Black Panther, who's a good guy. And he releases a pollen. I started reading, you know, you have the two types of the black ones that are, you know, the good guys, you know, your Black Panther. And then you have the ones that are bad, like your Black Hearts.
Black
goes from Black Heath, the bad guy, to Black Heath, the good guy, by releasing pollen. Although I wouldn't want to be around him. I have terrible allergies.
I think the cow is okay. But, you know, And Machine Smith, well, but everyone
Machine
else.
Machine Smith tackles, they're like, oh no,
yeah,
we got trouble. With a capital T. And that rhymes with P, and that stands for Plant Man. But Melissa busts in, and as Steve said, this outfit's kind of cool, and she's got Harrier's back and Cyclone and Amazon. Though Amazon looks a little more petite than she has in the past. I think this art team's decided not to make her all super huge like they used to.
You know what's funny is when Black Mambo gets taken down, you can tell she's lost her booties.
Just when they thought they were in trouble, because, you know, Machine Smith can control Machine, who makes the return but the missing good guy, bad guy, good guy, Skeen. And she's like, cowl, crimson cowl, I control fabric. Bam! And she takes the cowl machinery and attacks Machine Smith, leaving Justine Hammer with only her strategically placed smoke and hands to protect her modesty.
Do you think they took her other clothing too, or do you think she only had the cowl?
I don't know. That's a good question.
It's like,
I bet she had other clothing.
Does she only wear the underwear and the suit, or, you know, it's...
I would think. Well, she would take it all anyways, because she's all about embarrassing. Yeah. Like, that's her move, is to embarrass them.
Now, is Skin a character that existed before? Was she just made for this series, or had she existed some in, like, New Warriors or some other?
I think we thought she was the Spider-Woman. Didn't she have...
Yeah, Steve.
Okay, that's right.
The rundown, it was Gypsy Moth.
You're right. Okay. You're right.
But now she's like sexy Gypsy Moth.
Because it seemed like the only reason...
Moths aren't sexy.
It seemed like the whole purpose to have her was that she was going to totally be able to whoop Crimson Cowl's butt. You know what I mean? Like, this seemed to be the payoff of her being on Thunderbolts in this whole comic.
Yeah.
Well, I think they also wanted someone who wasn't such a... Like, they also had to replace... Moonstone could also be a little saucy. Yeah. So they needed the kind of vixen who would use her womanly wiles to get her way. But then... Everyone's favorite life model decoy shows up. Dum Dum Dugan.
Now this is my turn to ask the question, Steve. Are these elite agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. from somewhere?
Yeah, the rejected ideas, Ben, if you want my opinion.
Yeah, I certainly hope not.
Well, one of them is Skull. It kind of looks like a Crossbones guy.
It's terrible.
One of them looks like 90s guy with the long hair and the sunglasses.
Well, doesn't that look like the Heroes Reborn Iron Man suit guy?
Yeah, it's a pretty... I mean, it's bad enough Dum Dum Dugan's a robot, but to have these idiots...
And especially after just last issue showing, you know, Silver Sable's Wild Pack and everything, it's like, here's another group of, you know, mid to late 90s type
losers.
Commandos. Yeah, exactly.
But the last page made me laugh. It's a callback to a very old bit from way back from Dallas Reardon days. And Hawkeye washes up just like she did, and it's the same young girl. Because she goes, oh, blank, expletive, not again. And that made me laugh. I like that call. That was good. That was the best of the moment, maybe, out of these.
Is it just me, or does that Thunderbolt like insignia on his belt look like it was, like, I don't know if it was there originally, but it kind of looks like an afterthought. Like someone's like, oh, he forgot to draw it. I don't know if that's the case, but it just looks weird floating there.
It's so CGI'd in.
Yeah, maybe.
We go to 71, which features another Bobillo cover. Did you like this one, Steve?
Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah, this is the racy Thunderbolts cover.
Yeah, it's a skein with her sort of barely busting out outfit covering her unmentionables. And it starts right out with a cheap joke about Dum Dum Robot Dugan wants Plant Man. And he says, there's no buts about it, Songbird. And Songbird's butt is right in the middle of the page, which I'm sure is no accident. Another lady butt right next to her. It seemed like an interesting kind of like, okay, we got to have a lot of butts on this first page.
And isn't this the issue too, where they talk about her butt between the two characters later? Yeah. Like, are we going to save her butt and what a fine butt it is and all that?
Yeah, this is Manuel Garcia doing the pencils and Alvey inks.
Yeah.
So a lot of butt jokes. A lot of butt coverage, a lot of that twist boob butt shot, if you're fans of that. So S.H.I.E.L.D. is basically like, we need Jason Woodrue. Like, we need that guy. And then all these rats of Thunderbolts and the real ones are like, hey, you can't have them. Then we'll be under your thumb. And Robot Dugan is just, he is just angry.
Oh, this whole issue, he's just like sticking it to him, going, yeah, I want a gun to your heads and all this stuff. And you're like, wow, you're really hard in line here.
Yeah, I think this model had his wires crossed a little bit. They'll replace him. The next one will probably be a little bit more mellow. So, yeah, he's like, this will be a great incentive. And then Melissa throws up a sonic shield separating them. Says, we're not going to turn. You know, we're the good guys here. And then at that point, Amazon makes a hole and the rest run away.
Yeah, at this whole time, you hear these weird sound effects coming from Blackheath as he's sprouting.
Sporing.
Sporing.
Yeah, he's looking more and more swamp thingy as the issue progresses. But, yeah, so Songbird's like, she's a little disappointed, but she's, because she hopes Skin would help, and she's like, I can't help. And she's like, oh, just get out of here. I'll figure this out on my own.
Yeah, they all bail.
So Robo Dugan's like, these people aren't worth it. I can still take care of you. And she's like, hey, this ain't the right way to treat us. And he's like, well, I can outweigh you, because the longer you go, the more your buddy's going to dry out. And Plant Man's going to become Beef Jerky Man. And then he sends his own team, the Loser 101 squad, out to wrap the rest of those idiots up.
You find there's too much blur in this issue where it just looks awkward to look at. You're just like, I see what you're going for here, but too much blur.
I never liked, as I complained, I think on my first time I complained about that was when we were talking about the Age of Ultron issues, with when that issue had all that blur in it. Yeah, it's an effect I don't really feel like it adds a lot to it.
Did they have some of these elite agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in that weird Deathlok story where it was S.H.I.E.L.D. involved, the Joe Casey?
That's a good question.
That might have been the place where unless that was just that Larry Young guy's squad. I know they had some type of elite S.H.I.E.L.D. squad. There was like a few different things going on, but I'll have to look that up.
Editor's note. The elite agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. first appeared in a backup story by Bill Roseman and Scott Eaton in Captain America Annual 2000, which featured Protocide. Every time you mention Larry Young, I laugh. That's good. That's a good in-joke.
Want to let us in on it?
Okay.
Or do you want to just keep laughing at me?
I like the laughing because I wonder how many people realize, but I don't know when Joe Casey exactly came in, like what the timeline is when he came in at Marvel. But I know when he published some indie work, it was from ATI Planet Lar. And the guy who was the head honcho at the small press thing down in San Francisco, maybe they even like figured out some of these things at the Isotope Comic Lounge, was Larry Young.
Huh.
So it's funny that Joe Casey published a lot of stuff through that company, and then there's a character called Larry Young showing up in Marvel Comics.
It's also funny that you're like one of the few people I know who can say down in San Francisco.
Yeah, well, Andrew would be like up in San Francisco? Or west in San Francisco?
It's way up north for me.
Left in San Francisco?
I left my heart in San Francisco.
Well, as long as you don't leave Harrier and Cyclone. Because they are busy running away as fast as they can.
But Melissa told them to.
Hawkeye hits them with arrows.
Oh, but Melissa told them to.
We get one French word out of them, finally. We don't have a lot of Z's and V's and all that. And Sacre Bleu, but we do get a Y. Okay? As he's hit with the arrow. And then Skane, had captured Amazon. Tied her up with her own clothes. But he left her relatively decent. Although one of her breasts looks disturbing in that picture, so we'll pass, and hopefully it was some kind of processing problem. But Dum Dum Dugan and Melissa are now, she drops the barrier and they're chit-chatting, and he wants to know where they're getting the water from.
Oh,
but it flashes to Hydro Man, who's looking super dehydrated, although really he's, just made of water. So I don't know why he looks like a person.
That's what he gets, because he was sucking the water out of Plant Man before, so right back at you.
Yeah,
I know, so, it's funny. You know what's terrible here about Dugan, too, is Songbird keeps on saying, like, yeah, he's Black Heath, and, like, Dugan's like, I'm not having anything like this. You're all terrible bad guys that never change and all this stuff, and I'm like, whoa, back up here.
Exactly. And also, why a robot smoke cigars?
It's because he's not a robot at this point.
He's an LMD. We all learned that.
I thought you said he was a broken LMD.
Well, clearly from his attitude,
he's like our pal on the on Twitter. Mark.
That's right.
He hooked me up. Not only did he's like my left arm man. He hooked me up with a left arm to finish that Ultron build-a-figure for the Marvel Legends. And then after you guys started pointing my nose in the direction of like, yeah, you should really try to finish that Giant Man build-a-figure. So then he ended up hooking me up with the left arm for that. It's awesome.
He is your left arm man.
Yeah,
good on you. Thank you, loyal listener. I mean, assuming you're still listening. And if not, thank you anyways. But as the fake Thunderbolt squad gets together, they get attacked. And the first guy they take out is Skull with one L. And I don't know how Hawkeye knows he only has one L in his name, but he does. And he knows he's S.H.I.E.L.D. Elite. S.H.I.E.L.D. Elite, it's more like Casey from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. How fast he went down. And then Amazon takes out a few more of those Jokers. Basically, the Elite squad is not particularly elite.
Cannon fodder.
M80, which is the lady who throws explosives, gets gummed up with some gum arrows.
Well, Hawkeye's landed everyone's files, that's why.
And then Skeen, maxes it up, mixes it up with metal arms from the Metal Men, and they end up making out. Because Hawkeye said, by any means necessary, and that's what it was, and Amazon just knocks him out. She's like, hey, I was just following orders.
But it was cool how she kind of tricked him, though, because he has, what, those, like, golden light construct-y things, and then she sort of had some control over that kind of stuff, too, and it totally took him off his game.
Yeah, well, and also, you know, she's an attractive lady. Why wouldn't you just make out? Forget that, he's in the army with S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, he probably doesn't get a lot of chance to see the ladies.
You know what, can I just say, these couple of issues here with this big melee again, it reminds me of the other Masters of Evil Crimson Cowl issues of Thunderbolts when they end up having the big confrontation and stuff, and then there's all these characters, and there are all these B-level characters pulling out from here and there and renaming them, so you're just getting all these different crazy names and costumes, and it reminds me a lot of Savage Dragon. From over at Image Comics, I got a real Savage Dragon vibe when it was, you know, because some of his I don't remember what his Masters of Evil connection with their version of it is, but they have the Vicious Circle, that's what it is.
I was gonna tell you it was Vicious Circus, and I'm like, that doesn't sound right.
And there's all, you know, and Larson comes up with all these different character names, and they have a cow-looking person, too, and all this stuff, and they have their own leader that keeps coming up with different groups of them, and then you're always fighting these big melees of all these characters left and right with crazy names. You don't know if you've ever seen them before, or if you're ever going to see them again, and costumes everywhere, and that's just the vibe I got out of this. It's a good vibe.
Yeah, it's a traditional Thunderbolts vibe, I think, that carries through the whole run.
And it's a Marvel vibe that is part of what Larson puts into his comics that I enjoy.
And then it ends with, as usual, you can't go more than a few issues without Hawkeye pointing an arrow at Cyclone, which seems, as we've discussed, not that threatening to Cyclone. But
this one's really sharp.
I mean, unless it has, like, bubble gum or something at the end of it, he's just going to be able to snap it. Bam. But anyways, Hawkeye threatens Harrier and Cyclone. And then on the next page, we see they've joined because Harrier's Mach 3-esque outline lets you know that they've joined. And they're going to go in there and, get the deal with Melissa, find out what's going on.
And I hope they're going to save Silver Sable, too. Like, she was captured by the Crimson Cowl.
Yeah, well, you know, she got taken out pretty quickly, and I think she's dead again. So Melissa and Dum Dum are still having their back and forth, and she's like, nobody's come, so it's just us. And that's when Hydro Man bursts in and is like, I can't stop him. And that's when he totally plants out and turns into like a Hulk guy, kind of like a cross between, I don't know, like an ant and a character from ElfQuest.
Check out that beard, though.
It doesn't kind of remind you a little bit with the ears of ElfQuest. So, and he's kind of miffed that, like, he did all the sacrifice, and they're still going to, you know, lock him up. And Songbird's like, hey, we do the right thing because it's the right thing. And Hawkeye agrees, and Hawkeye shows up. And then Hawkeye's like, hey, if it doesn't work out, you can still kill everybody afterwards. And yeah, he's like, fair enough.
That was a good line. I like that really, that line really captured Hawkeye's personality throughout this whole Thunderbolts run, right? It's like he gets it from the other side, and he isn't afraid to give them a little rope, you know, a little slack along those lines. Like, you know, everyone doesn't automatically look at me like, what? You know, it's like, oh, yeah, you could kill everybody.
Hawkeye then tells Robo Dugan that he's leaving, and so's the team. They're the good guys now. But then we have an off-panel person who just has a half glove on. That's all we can see. Say, how would you good guys like to help save the world?
Uh-oh.
And I think Hawkeye should have said, what the? But he says, what now? And then that's where we end. Another day, another world-saving mission. It looks kind of like sawing mission.
Yeah.
Yeah, no letters pages in these.
But yeah, I guess not. I guess the other letters pages were all on the... were left on Counter Earth.
I was going to say, the letters are getting sent to the other office.
Yeah. They're in Counter Earth. Time.
This office is going to be getting letters regarding the Thunderbolts soon enough. What is this Fight Club garbage?
Oh.
Where's Zemo? Where's Songbird?
It's going to get interesting. I don't want to get into it, but you're not going to be here, Steve, when, you know, when we...
I will listen, though.
Oh, okay.
You don't want me there. You don't want me there.
It's going to be fascinating. Same complaints from 2002, Kevin, but I like this half. Like, I probably more than the Counter-Earth side. Like, some of the cool characters were on the Counter-Earth side, but, like, you had Melissa and Hawkeye and some cool stuff.
What were 2002 Kevin's complaints? For those that don't recall, Kevin kept some records when these were contemporaneous, so he treats us to how his views then, his views now, and if the two Kevins agree.
The thing you have to remember, though, is I sort of remember, but he had someone else doing the issue summaries, so he doesn't have any official comment on these issues. Like, he was letting Kevin's the website lazy. Slide.
How did you have somebody else, number one? Yeah, and number two, are you sure it was somebody else and you didn't just, like, sign in with another account and so you could like your own page?
Well, it was funny because some of the summaries he did do, but then someone else filled in some issues he missed, and then they redid some issue summaries, and he didn't really know how to explain some of the stuff. So he's like, this person wrote better summaries, so he actually put those in. It was from the Thunderbolts message board, I'm sure, at the time. Like, someone was just like, hey, you need help doing this? And I'm like, sure.
This is getting pretty meta with 2016 Kevin commenting on 2002 Kevin, who is using a shill account
on GeoCities.
Yeah,
I think we're through the looking glass here, people.
Well, he also had some critical assessments of some Thunderbolts issues, Avengers readers that he had posted on his website. But I'm trying to figure him out too, because he was too hard on this run. So I'm trying to figure out why that would be, and I'm thinking maybe it was because of the biweekly schedule. Like, he wasn't reading them back-to-back. The green stuff, you know, the human sapien type of stuff. And then, the nanoprobes. I'm like, they're doing it again with spores, but I don't really mind. Like, I thought this was pretty enjoyable.
Reading it, the stories straight through on either side, I think, makes a big difference. Having it split up biweekly like that, That's a nightmare.
2016, Steve sticking up for 2002, Kevin. Scorecard to keep track of who's on whose side.
Well, I know with these biweeklies, like, they were sort of in addressing some of the Thunderbolts criticism, like the book was like a dense book with a lot of plots and, you know, etc. So, like, starting with, I think, that Songbird solo issue, they were, you know, showing people that, hey, this might not be what you think the Thunderbolts is. You know, come try this out again.
Yeah, so now it's a light book with a lot of different pencilers.
Yeah.
I'm like, who was complaining about too much plot? I want to meet these people who are like, you know what? I don't like that there's so much story here.
I want a little less story for my money.
I guess they loved New Marvel then, because that was the height of decompression. So if they didn't want plot in their story, they must have been happy going, wow, I read this in 5 minutes. Like, they would have been in their joy. But even though the book reads faster, there's still a ton of characters in the book.
Yes. Oh, there's a lot here. I'm just, like I said, wanted to meet these people that are like, you know, it's too much. It hurts my head to keep track of all these plot lines. Like, I think I might be on with 2016, Kevin. I think this storyline seems to move a little slicker. There are good ideas on the Counter-Earth one. But the whole mumbo-jumbo science about Richards created the place and what does that spaceship have to do with anything and how did they determine that they have to blow it? Like, it just seems like a lot of, it doesn't make sense. We're just going to tell you we need to get from A to B and here's the mechanism to do it, even though it doesn't make sense.
And on Counter-Earth, you get weird things like the Rip. On Earth proper, you find out who the Crimson Cowl is finally and stuff like that.
And I don't give a rip about the Rip. Unless it's Rip Taylor.
Yeah, so I think it was many episodes back, though, Andrew, you said, like, oh, Justine Hammer. And I'm like, you're spoiling it already.
Please, Hammer, don't hurt him. But that's it. Now it's the big countdown to 75. That's going to be, it's been intimated in the letters pages when they existed that was a big deal. So we're heading down to the, I don't know the fancy word for 75, but the 75th issue of Thunderbolts. I hope Marvel Noise listeners will stay tuned and stay with us. Oh, wait, I should throw to Super Steve. Super Steve, your thought on these issues?
They're adequate. They're continuing to tell the story that I want to see how it gets to the end of it. But it's all over the place between the two things going back and forth, the artists all over the place, the editorial change, the fact that the whole focus of the book is going to change after 75 issues and three more issues. It all is pretty apparent that this is a ship that everyone is getting off of.
So your ship is sinking.
It's not my ship, but I see it from across the bay and people are jumping off left and right and then they will hit rock bottom and they will have their fight bolts and then they'll get back to business. And honestly, since we've started this segment, those are the issues that I really wanted to reread because this stuff really was the classic Thunderbolts, especially the older issues that I had read, the Bagley stuff and all that. But this whole new Thunderbolts that's coming up and when it hits to issue 100 and the incorporation of Genus Vell and all that stuff. I read it once, and now I don't remember it so well. So I really want to get back there and check those issues out, and I feel like that's getting back to Thunderbolts proper, at least the way I remembered it. So I'm eager to revisit that stuff and check it out, especially with you guys, who now are two of the three leading Thunderbolts aficionados on the planet Earth.
Oh, nice. Oh, and you can also check out... if you need more Thunderbolts goodness, the Thunderbolts Tumblr at thunderbolts.tumblr.com. Doesn't sound good. It never does.
What was it? Tumblrbolts? Is that what you decided? Or Thumblrbolts? Thumblrbolts.
It never sounds good. That doesn't just come, you know, right off your tongue. It just doesn't.
I thought you were saying it like three different ways simultaneously because you couldn't remember which it actually was. Like it was, the land shark from the old Saturday Night Live things, like ding ding, Mrs. Harfleagle.
No,
Mrs. Jarlsberg.
I have it in a notepad and I'm looking at it and I can still never say it.
Thumblrbolts.
Thumblrbolts.
Yes.
Yes, but. Yeah, good point about Silver Sable. I'd forgotten she was in these. But I'm sure she's going to come back and join the team. So until Silver Sable becomes a Thunderbolt, hopefully you'll keep listening and keep making ours collectively Marvel Noise.
Later.
Yeah.